Hi again. It's your weekly horoscope columnist, Christopher Renstrom, back to share with you some pretty exciting news. You will soon have a chance to study with me in my upcoming course, The Cosmic Calendar, produced here at Astrology Hub. The Cosmic Calendar is designed to teach you how to turn your birth chart into a personal calendar, one that's uniquely aligned to your natural flow and personal seasons. You'll be able to look at the year ahead and know exactly how to plan your life. Whether you're looking to launch a business, dive back into the dating pool, or finally get around to writing that book you said you'd get around to writing one day, the Cosmic Calendar will help you to identify the best times of year to pursue your dreams. So if you want to be the first to know more about the Cosmic Calendar, then sign up for the waitlist now at astrologyhub.com/cosmicwaitlist. Again, that's astrologyhub.com/cosmicwaitlist. I am so looking forward to seeing you there.
Welcome to The Cosmic Connection, presented by Astrology Hub. I'm your host, Amanda Poole Walsh, founder of Astrology Hub, here with master astrologer Rick Merlin-Levine. This is your place to explore the order and beauty of the cosmos and your connection to it all. Well, welcome everybody. It's so great to be here with all of you, and I'm thrilled to be here with Rick Merlin-Levine, and we're going to be diving into the February forecast.
And I'm thrilled to be here with Amanda Pua Walsh. What a lucky guy I am.
You know, when I was preparing for this today, I was like, God, February already? Like, it seems like January just started. And I don't know about all of you, but it seems like I've been in like the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I'm still adjusting to the 90s being gone.
Perfect. All right. Well, the theme that we explored last month for January was the beginning is here. I know we're now going to be talking about how the tides are shifting a bit, and you're saying that this will be somewhat of a kinder and gentler energy moving forward in February. But don't dive in. Don't go there yet. Before we do that, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your upcoming event that everybody is invited to.
Oh, well, everybody who's in the Los Angeles area, although I think they're going to be doing some virtual broadcasting at the event also. The Conscious Life Expo has been going on in LA for years. It's a huge event with, a few hundred exhibitors and a couple over 100 speakers. And they've wanted for years to get an astrology track going, but it's always been a bit marginalized. And so, you know, it's the regular, you know, past life regression and past lives and crystals and growth potential and yoga and alternate history and UFOs and all these fascinating things. But this year, first year ever, there's going to be a full-on astrology track featuring yours truly.
All right.
And all I can say is they have me working. If you're in the Los Angeles area, this is going to be at the LAX Hilton, at the Hilton at the airport in Los Angeles, consciouslifeexpo.com. It's a full, the full catalog is there. I mean, they even have a Spanish speaking part of the program. It's a huge program. I'll be doing a lecture on Saturday, a panel discussion on Saturday afternoon with a couple of other astrologers, including David Palmer, Leo King. On Saturday evening, they're going to be doing a screening of the first episode of Changing of the Gods, and then I'll be leading a panel discussion after that. On Sunday, I'm doing another lecture on reincarnation, and then on Monday, after the event is over, I'll be doing three segments. You can go to one, two, or all three of them. The program is online. It's in depth, and if you're in the LA area, it'll be a lot of fun. If you're coming there from Astrology Hub, please come up to me, introduce yourself and say, Astrology Hub, and I'll be extra nice to you. Or
thank you.
Before we jump into the material, though, for today, I also wanted to mention that many of you know that I had a bit of a Instagram disaster where my account was stolen and I couldn't get help. And for months I went back and forth with them, or I should say I went forth, but I never got anything back. And eventually I just walked away from, you know, well over 20,000 followers. And I started a brand new account with the same old name, because that name was free again. And so this is Rick Levine Astrologer. And at that site or at that account, I write what some people call a daily horoscope. I've decided to change it because it's not really a horoscope. What it is it's a short astrological muse. It's a short astrological wandering or just some sort of reflection, maybe the better way of saying it. And it's every day, 7 days a week, and it's at Rick Levine Astrologer. And because my following right now is so low, I implore everyone, come and make me feel better. Follow me. And
follow Rick. Yes, we will. So, Rick, will it be obvious the difference between the one that was hacked and
the one that's hacked is not there anymore? You can't find it. It's not going to be around. It's not. Yeah, it's just Rick Levine Astrologer. There is a video on it that's like a permanent real story, whatever you call it. That's me basically saying, it's me. So there's no question about it. But it's Rick Levine Astrologer. I use Rick Levine Astrologer also for my Facebook and for other things. So it just works.
Okay, go follow Rick on Instagram right
listen
now.
Listen to what Amanda says. Do everything she says.
If you're on Instagram, just go do it. It'll take 2 seconds, and then you're going to get his daily astrological musings, which I love to tune into. I love whatever.
Yeah, it's a combination. If you don't have time, it's just a graphic with like two or three words that just, you know, just is takes no reading at all. But if you want to do the deeper dive every day, you know, they run a couple hundred words long, and
they're super helpful. They're fun. Yes, they are fun. And isn't it your photography that you feature on there too, Rick?
Well, I do sometimes. The bottom line is that I've been doing this long enough that I really kind of ran out, and so I do use my photographs on occasion these days. Mm-hmm. Mostly they're stock photographs, though. That's what I've resorted to. It's you know, like the difference of what it is every day is just it's like a daily horoscope, but it basically just says, you know, here's the key feature of the day, and here's what we might want to do. I try always to take whatever the energy is, whether it's positive or negative, and give people something practical that they can bite into and use in their life. And then the other thing is every day I have a quote, and I end every day's column with a quote that's relevant to what was going on. And there are many people who say they follow me just to read the quotes.
There's some great quotes on there. Okay. So everybody's doing that now. And I also have one more announcement before we dive into February. We're going to get there. I promise. We have a waitlist open for a new course that we're doing with Christopher Renstrom, astrologer and historian Christopher Renstrom. Many of you know him and love him. The course is based on his book, The Cosmic Calendar, and it's going to be an opportunity for you to learn from Christopher directly and take the content from that course and practically apply it to your life, which is basically taking your chart and the astrology and then mapping your year. So when is the best time to launch that business? When is the best time for you personally to get married, to move? You know, whatever those things that you're deciding about your life and you're looking at the year ahead, you're going to be able to use your chart and then the actual astrology, the transits, and map the right timing for you. So this is happening in March. We're timing the course with the beginning of the astrological new year, which is the new moon, the Aries new moon. But you can get on the wait list right now. So registration isn't open yet, but I just want to let you know that it is coming, and you can get on the wait list at astrologyhub.com/cosmic waitlist.
I had a fantastic coffee and cup of soup with Christopher when I was in Salt Lake City.
Recently.
Nice. Last month on my great East Coast trip on my way home, I was in Salt Lake City. And so we got together for a light afternoon. It was less about the meal than it was just to connect. So,
it would be really fun to have you and Christopher on something at some point together.
Anytime. I really adore Christopher's work, and And he is just so, he's so knowledgeable about certain slices of things that it's just like, I'm in awe of what he knows.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, that's all coming up soon. And let's go into February now, Rick. So we had, again, the beginning of the year, your first theme of the year was the beginning is here, which we had a chuckle about, I remember. And now you're saying that the theme for February is kinder and gentler. So walk us through.
When you asked me, I actually wanted to say it's still beginning. The beginning is still here.
It feels like that. I mean, it feels like this prolonged beginning.
Yeah, but there is less turbulence right now. There's some stuff coming up. I mean, there's some rocky times. We're far from done with whatever the last 2 years, you know, were. And I think that the end of January, which we could say is very, very, very early February, where we end January with a new moon in Aquarius, that's not a terribly easy new moon. The full moon, which is in mid-March, the full moon, I think, is a lot easier. It's not a disastrous full moon. I think that's on February 16th. I think I said March before.
You did, right? Yeah.
But that full moon is a relatively sane full moon. We'll drill down on that in a little bit. But because February is so short, February is, I'm coining a new word, new moonless.
New moonless. Amazing.
Yeah, because there's a new moon on January 31st, and that means that January has two new moons in it, because it had one on the 1st and one on the 31st. But the crazy thing is that March has two new moons in it also, because the new moon that actually in some places on the planet will be late at night on February 28th. But in most places, including Seattle and Hawaii, that new moon will actually occur on March 1st, which means that March then has, like January, two new moons, which is kind of crazy. It's poor February doesn't get one. You know, after the revolution, February will be given that extra new moon again to kind of make it so that there's not haves and have-nots in the months.
Nice.
So the beginning of February really starts off with this new moon that is the end of January. And the reason why this is so interesting and significant is that, you know, we for well over a year, we've been talking about this ongoing Saturn-Uranus square. Well, the Saturn-Uranus square technically is over. Remember, that was exact 0-degree orb. It was exactly a 90-degree aspect on Christmas Eve or Christmas Eve, depending on where you are on the planet. That's done. By February 1st, Saturn, which is moving direct now, is at 15 degrees of Aquarius, and Uranus is at 10 degrees of Taurus. What that means is that Aquarius to Taurus, still in square, but now their separation from exact, their orb, is 5 degrees. And so 5 degrees, it's still an aspect, but it's certainly weakened compared to where it was when it was exact back in January of 2021, and then in mid-June, and then the end of December. And so what's important, though, is that the new moon that happens on January 31st, and therefore on February 1st, the month opens with the sun and the moon still in Aquarius, the sun in Aquarius, but the moon, having been a new moon the day before, is also still in Aquarius, and Saturn is right in the middle between the sun and the moon. And so what we have is, because Uranus is at 10 degrees, that's 5 degrees lower than the 15 degrees of Saturn, the moon and the sun both square Uranus first, and then they each conjoin Saturn. And so what we're getting is the reverse. I talked about this last month a little bit, about how last year, because Uranus was at a higher degree. Saturn was at the lower degree. We were basically having to get real pull in, bump up against resistance, and then Uranus would come and it would go breakthrough. And now it's happening in the other way, and it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. And the first chance we get to see this unfolding is at this new moon, because the moon, about 4 hours prior to the new moon, the moon is square Uranus. This is like exciting breakthrough, something happening, destabilization. We may see that in these last days of January. We're recording this at the end of January. So what will happen, though, is that after the new moon, just a few hours after the new moon, the moon will catch up to Saturn, and then we'll have some resistance. We'll have to make it real. We'll have to pull in. And then a few days later, the sun will catch up with Saturn, and that occurs on February 4th. And so the sun's alignment with Saturn is something real, something solid, something stable comes out of all of the craziness. It'll be interesting to see what that is, whether it's some sort of political agreement or whether things, you know, right now it feels like several things on different fronts have fallen apart. Whether it's the U.S. dealing with or the Western Europe and U.S. is dealing with Ukraine, or so many other things. It's just that we might get some solidity out of this by somewhere around the 4th. Now, the other thing that is interesting here, so just let me just recap very quickly, because this will come up again later in the month. We have the sun squaring Uranus on February, let's see if I can tell you that date exactly. On January 30th, the day before the new moon. And then we have the sun conjoining, catching up with Saturn on February 4th. It's now the difference between January 30th and February 4th, that's like 5 days, 5 or 6 days of difference. Whereas back toward the end of last year, those things were hitting Saturn and Uranus within a few hours of each other because they were so close exact to being square. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we are in the midst of a retrograde direct shuffle, that we've had Venus retrograde all last month, all of January, pretty much. And it actually turned direct on January 29th. Venus turns direct. Mercury turns direct on February 3rd. So within a week, the last two holdouts, remember last autumn in the northern hemisphere, we had, going from the slowest moving planet inward, we had Pluto retrograde, Neptune retrograde, Uranus retrograde, Saturn retrograde, Jupiter retrograde. All the heavyweights were retrograde, and one by one, they turned direct. Remember, the outer planets go retrograde 4 or 5 months a year, way more than, let's say, Mercury, which goes retrograde 3 times a year, but it only does it for 3 weeks each time. So it's only like 2.5 months of a Mercury retrograde every year. Venus even less often, because its retrograde lasts about 40 days, and it does that once, not quite every other year. But the point is that Venus has already turned direct by February 1st. And Mercury is barely moving. So Venus and Mercury both having changed or will be changing from retrograde to direct. And the fact that then for the rest of most of February, they will be going through places in the sky where they've already been, meaning what we call the shadow, meaning the planets come through an area of sky, they retrograde back over a certain area, which they've already done. And then when they turn direct, they go over that area a third and final time. This is why we say three strikes and you're out. Yeah, I know it comes from baseball, but the idea in astrology is that often things happen in threes, because all the real planets, meaning Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, Eris, Chiron, all the non-satellites, not the moon and not the sun, they all go retrograde. And if they go retrograde, they're at some point in time going to conjoin the microphone, and then they're going to make a second conjunction with it as they go backward, and then a third conjunction as they go forward. And this rhythm of having three times to get something right is very important in astrology. Some people, like with a Saturn return, they might have the Saturn return happen three times, first direct, then retrograde, and then direct again. And sometimes I've heard people go, oh no, my Saturn return is stretched over 9 months because I'm getting it direct, retrograde, and direct. And someone else says, yeah, well, I got it lucky because I only had it once. Well, it might be just the opposite. And I want to say that because we have this phenomenon kicking right now. And when I say just the opposite, I mean that when a planet goes over a point, retrogrades over that point again, and then goes direct, it's not like we get something awful happening three times. It's like we get more time to deal with whatever the transition or change of phase actually is. So that first time is like a warning. We might respond to it. We might do a lot of work. The second time on the retrograde may be a lot easier if we actually have done the work. Otherwise, it's like a wake-up call saying, hey, you haven't done this yet. And then on the third and final time through, if we've been in denial or sleeping through the whole thing, it can be really tough. However, if we've done the work, sometimes that third and final time is just like a confirmation of like, yep, you're through this point. So as these planets turn direct, they're actually going to, each of them, make a third and final conjunction with Pluto. That was the microphone, because the sun last month came across the microphone, Pluto, and then Mercury did, and Venus actually did first back in December, and then they all turned retrograde, and now we have this month, we have Mercury having just lined up with Pluto direct, I'm sorry, having just lined up with Pluto retrograde. Mercury is now switched direction, or will on the third, and Mercury will line up exactly with Pluto the third and final time on February 11th. And in fact, Venus, which is slower moving than Mercury, will line up with Pluto that third and final time, but not until March. And so the weight of these planets going over Pluto again and again and again, and I should say in March at the new moon at the beginning of March, not only is Venus lining up with Pluto, but Mars, which has moved into Capricorn, Pluto's in Capricorn, Mars is also there. And so we have a tremendous powerhouse of the start to March, which we'll save for next month's talk. Right now, I just want to make sure everyone understands that when planets go over Pluto, in this case, the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, Mercury and Venus three times, the third time coming up for each of them, and Mars only once at the beginning of March, all of this is about things that are hidden, Pluto, the underworld, things that are unconscious, things that we're in denial over, things that have to do with power and expression of power coming to the surface, things coming up from the underworld, from the unconscious. The phoenix, which is one of the archetypal representations of Pluto, is a magical bird that is born from the ashes of the ruins of destruction. It has to burn down for the phoenix to actually rise. And that phoenix is a symbol of reincarnation, which happens after disincarnation, or reconstruction, which happens after deconstruction. That's Pluto's job. And so we're in the midst of this period of time as Pluto is approaching the end of Capricorn and has for a decade been in this role of deconstruction. We're now perhaps getting some inklings of how this mess might come back together. Still a little premature. We're around the bend.
Okay, Rick, question for you. So we're going to be having the third pass over Pluto.
Of Mercury and Venus.
Mercury and Venus. Okay, so in your analogy of the phoenix rising, would this be the period where we feel that rising? Because it's the third time. So we have like the breakdown, the transformation, and then the rising. Yes.
I say yes, but time is relative, and there are those people who have done enough work that they might have gotten that rebirthing beginning already, and this is then just a confirmation of it. But what you said in theory is true. The third and final is like the finality on it. But even though Mercury sweeps past Pluto the first week, what did I say, on February 11th, and Venus sweeps past Pluto the third and final time the first week of March, Mars, which has not been in this mix, Mars having just moved into Capricorn, Mars in traditional astrology is dignified in Capricorn. It's said to be exalted. When Mars is not at home in Aries, Mars's favorite place to be is in Capricorn. Why? Because it finishes what it starts. And so with this conjunction at the new moon coming up, at the new moon coming up in March, we have Mars and Venus conjoining Pluto, and stuff that has not come out is coming out. Things that are hidden. Hidden power struggles. This is a power struggle. Pluto is a struggle for dominance because Pluto can be ruthless. It's unstoppable. It's that life tide that pushes us through birth and death in a process that, regardless of what we do, that life tide is going to flow in its own way. It cannot be stopped. I think of Pluto as like the beginning of a nuclear reaction. Once it started, you can't stop it halfway. Once lightning begins to strike, you can't stop it. It's going to play through. And so we're seeing this right now playing through this way. And incidentally, next January, February, March, there'll be the last round of that playing through because Pluto will be at the very, very, very end of Capricorn, just about ready to move into Aquarius. And so we're definitely feeling the edges of what's coming, but we're still not there.
Okay, another question for you. So you say that Mars conjoining Pluto in Capricorn is going to happen around the new moon in March. Now, yes. I've heard astrologers say that when it's Mars, you feel the energy leading up to it. So in February, will we be feeling that energy yet? And then it sort of dies down after in March?
Yes. I remember back in December of, I think it must have been 2018, when Saturn first moved into Capricorn. I was going around telling everyone Saturn only has one thing to do in Capricorn, and it's his meeting with the big guy, Pluto, that'll happen on January 12th, 2020. I would say that Mars, which entered into Capricorn just a couple days ago, that Mars only has one thing to do while it is in Capricorn, and that's his meeting of Venus and Pluto simultaneously, because as Mars is moving forward, Mars moves kind of similar speed, a little bit slower, but a similar speed to Venus, and especially because Venus is going so slow right now because it's still coming out of this retrograde. But what's interesting is that Venus and Mars, the cosmic lovers, the archetype for creation and procreation. Venus and Mars come together while they're lined up with Pluto, which intensifies, deepens, gives power, volatility, and an incredible dynamic. And so, yes, all of February is like in some ways in preparation for the Pisces new moon, which actually occurs on March 2nd. Mm-hmm. And it's a very intense new moon because we have Venus, Mars, and Pluto in Capricorn. We also have a conjunction of Mercury, which is direct, Mercury and Saturn in Aquarius, an exact conjunction on the day of the new moon. And the new moon in Pisces is conjunct Jupiter. Now, let me just break that down into English just in a sentence. And that is, we have this Capricorn deconstruction stuff happening and stuff coming out that no one ever knew, or that we knew but we couldn't say out loud. It's like coming out of a decade or two where no one said the word cancer. I don't mean the sign cancer, but if someone had cancer, it was just they had a long illness. Because it was such a horrific word that you couldn't say it out loud. That's Pluto. And now Pluto's coming out into the open with these direct planets moving across it. At the same time, we have the Mercury coming into conjunction with Saturn, which again, we're going to feel as soon as Mercury, now back in Capricorn, as soon as when Mercury moves direct, Mercury actually will change signs and moves into Aquarius on Valentine's Day, on February 14th. That's an interesting thing. We might have more to say that on that in a little bit. But Mercury and Saturn together is authority. It's holding back. It's needing to deal with the truth, needing to change our minds if we're wrong about something. That Mercury Saturn conjunction is very constrictive. And then we have the new moon in Pisces that is not only conjunct Jupiter, but Neptune is there, and they're all moving toward Neptune, as is Jupiter moving toward Neptune. It doesn't get there until mid-April, but this is a 1-in-14-year expansiveness. Dreams, imagination, Neptune become our opportunity. And so all of this is part of that process. But in February, we're getting the feeling that there's something, that we're building to something. We're not there yet. It's relatively smooth sailing. Now, I say that, but there are so many things right now on the planet that are like tinderboxes, that any of them could be, you know, set off into a disaster, if you will. But astrologically, it looks like we're building things toward the beginning of March.
All right. So it's, the energy is mounting, but it's a little bit gentler in the amount of eruption or surprises or intensity. But we are like moving towards a point, and that point is mainly this Mars-Venus conjunction, Pluto conjunction in Capricorn, plus the Jupiter-Neptune-Pisces action. That's all happening at that March 2nd new moon.
Right. Well, the Jupiter-Neptune is still 8 degrees of orb. That's not exact until April. But right. But at that new moon, we have the sun and the moon and Jupiter and Neptune all cohabitating, all sharing Pisces energy. You know, and although there may be no surprises, that doesn't mean that there won't be any disruption. I'll just say the Ukraine as an example. We don't know what's going to happen there, but we know, but if that turns into actual fighting on the ground for whatever period of time, we're not going to be surprised, because it's already building up.
Right.
I mean, hopefully we'll figure out a way through it. And I don't want to say too much about that.
Yeah.
Just that we don't know what's going to happen on some of these other events. And there are many things like that. But I think that there is a crescendo in early March around these issues.
Can I ask you another question about this Mars, Venus?
You're in charge. Okay.
So you talked about Mars, Venus, Pluto revealing things, hidden things coming to the surface. What else, how else would you interpret that exact kind of configuration? It seems kind of unique, is it? I mean, that Mars, Venus, and Pluto are all conjunct in Capricorn together at the very last
Yeah, it is. I mean, Mars catches up with Pluto once every other year, a little bit less than that.
Yeah.
Venus catches up with Pluto about once a year, but give or take, it's a little bit more than a year. And so the individual conjunctions of the inner planets and of any planet with Pluto are relatively, a regular event. But the inner planets, the sun, moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, happen all the time. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're happening at the same time, that it makes it a triple conjunction, is a bit more rare. And it's also a bit more volatile, because Pluto is volatile. Pluto has that, the intensity you know, it's like things under pressure, underground. Pluto is underground, you know, and it used to be that wealthy people owned what was underground. Diamonds, copper, iron, tin. I mean, the real wealth was not in imaginary money, but was in minerals that was underground. A plutocracy is a government by, theoretically, people who have stuff stored up underground, because Pluto is that which is hidden. But we now relate Pluto. We often think of Venus as related to money. And in some ways it is. It's the money that buys nice things. You know, Venus, it's, you know, it's money spent for pleasure, if you will. But Pluto is real money. Pluto is the mass money. Pluto, you know, are the billionaires, you know, that club. That's the plutocracy. And so as Mars lines up with Pluto, I think of my old astrology partner, buddy Jeff Jauer, used to say that when you were around Pluto and Mars together, you knew that you were in a nasty neighborhood. Because there's a power struggle going on. Mars, you know, remember, Mars in ancient astrology is a malefic. It doesn't mean that it's bad. It means that it's difficult to manage. Saturn is a malefic. We have Mercury lined up with Saturn, or coming toward that by the end of February, beginning of March, and that Mars lining up with Pluto, with Venus there. Venus theoretically should sweeten it, but what it really does is it intensifies our values that are going into the cauldron, where they're being under pressure, under heat and pressure. They're basically being forged into something new. You think of an alloy like bronze. You know, bronze is made up of copper and tin. But once you melt copper and tin together, when it cools, you can't melt it again and separate out the copper from the tin. The alloy hardens into something that's very different. And I think that when Venus, the planet of values, and Mars, the planet of aggression and assertion, as they line up with Pluto, I think we're going to see out in the open some power struggles that we've already seen. They're already unfolding, but things are going to become, I think, more visible as that which was unseen, Pluto, becomes seen. And yes, I think that with Mars, often we're trigger happy. And I don't mean that it can be, but I don't mean it with respect to weaponry or guns. I mean that we're impulsive, we're ready to react before it happens. However, Pluto is the icy, cold, deep, emotionless. It's hard to say it's emotionless because it's also the most passionate, but it can hold that cold spot as long as it needs to because of some emotion. You know, we take love or hate or fear, and we can take those energies that are so powerful, and with Pluto, we can drive them so deep that it looks like we're, like Saturn does that in a way too, when you think of a Saturn person as being cold and calculating. And in fact, they may seem that way, but they may be an absolutely warm-hearted person that's cold and calculating because they're trying to get something done for their home, their family, their posterity, their tribe, whatever. So this is going to be an interesting month, because even with everything I've just said, although it builds to this crescendo around the new moon, which is also weird because we think of crescendos at the full moon and seeds at the new moon. So what is this seed, which is also a turning point, going to plant? But coming back to February, February is not March. February is a bit smoother and kinder, but it's going toward somewhere. February has an agenda. Its agenda is March 2nd.
I love that. Right?
Everything will happen on March 2nd, but it suggests that things will happen around that period of time.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. That's really clear what you just described. Let's go to the new moon. Actually, this is so funny because we can barely talk about February, because now we're talking about the next new moon, which is actually in January.
And the current new moon, which was the last new moon, which was the end of January, and the next new moon, which is the beginning of March.
Right. Exactly. Okay. But
So February is in between, and that's what's important here.
Yes. So the next new moon that's happening, that is going to be the new moon that's coloring the month of February, although it's happening in January. Someone asked a question. I didn't note the name, but if we work with the new moon and we're setting intentions, do you have any guidance for the kinds of things that we can be planting seeds for? And can you remind us again of the day and time of the new moon?
I can. The new moon is 9:46 p.m. on January 31st. That's Pacific time, which means technically that new moon occurs on February 1st in New York City, just 40 minutes into the new day. So this whole time zone thing is a little bit screwy here. It's why we're talking about the old new moon, even though for you in Hawaii and for me in Seattle, that new moon occurs on the evening or night of January 31st. It kind of falls over into the following day. For our friends in Europe, they also get it on February 1st rather than January 31st. But yes, that new moon will set the tone for the fortnight, for the 2 weeks ahead as it grows into the full moon. And this new moon is conjunct Saturn. It has just squared Uranus. So there's instability coming into it. But by the time we get through it, and we are talking here prior to this new moon, so even though, because this is a February report and we're talking about January being in the past, we haven't experienced this new moon yet. But one can imagine that there will be some stability, some immovability, something that will endure. It might be as simple as two sides in a potential military incursion that just stand off and go, this is immovable. That would be a sun and moon, a lunation new moon running into the wall of Saturn. I'm not saying that'll happen. I'm just saying that's a possibility. It also could be in some ways, because it's following the square to Uranus, there could be some breakthrough that we don't know about and some reality that I think of when planets line up with Saturn, it's almost like think of rain as clouds of water that are that condense or crystallize into snow and come to Earth. Well, when planets line up with Saturn, it's like Neptune or the dreams of our illusions in some way crystallize, precipitate to Earth. So often when we have planets that line up with Saturn, something quote unquote real occurs. Now it's tricky because it doesn't mean that what happens in the imagination is unreal. But when something happens in the three-dimensional world, then we know it's real. And so I think that going into February, we're getting a taste of this reality. And yet it's not at all a final dance. It's just the opening statement. The other thing, incidentally, is that at the new moon in March, we have Venus and Mars, which are on February 1st, are already in Capricorn. On the new moon in March, Mars and Venus are lined up with Pluto, Venus, for the third and final time. That's the new moon in March. But the new moon on January 31st or February 1st, that new moon in Aquarius, that new moon has retrograde Mercury lined up with Pluto. And so we're getting somewhat of a kick of the same thing, two new moons in a row, this one intellectually, this one Mercury, this one information, whereas the Venus and Mars by March is less about data or information than it is about how this is affecting people's values, how it's affecting their pocketbooks, how it's affecting where they're going in life and what they're doing. And it becomes more, what's the right word, visceral. It becomes more palpable, more in the three-dimensional world. So it's interesting. There's definitely continuity between the new moon at the beginning and end, or really at just before the beginning and just after the end of February. But it does set the tone.
So would you say, in terms of this Saturn influence, that if someone was setting personal intentions for this new moon coming up on January 31st/February 1st, that creating a structure around their values and or grounding their values, making them real, and or putting something that requires discipline into their intentions. Would those be some good guiding principles for that?
Spoken as an astrologer. Well said.
Thanks.
I would add one thing to that, though, and that is because the sun and the moon, whether it is a couple of hours before or a few days before, they both square Uranus, that going into this, we can have a bit more wilder, more unconventional ideas about what we want to do. And yet at the moment of the new moon and the days after, until the sun joins Saturn on February 4th, that it's almost like we have to take all the everythings that we want to do and pare it back. It may be that we see in Congress, for example, in the United States, there's so many big things on the table that for political reasons, nothing's going to happen with. They're stuck. We may see pieces of them all of a sudden come out and come and get passed through as that Saturn says, make this real. But it has to pull back from the Uranus, crazy everything, idealistic. It's not just idealistic. It's the potential of anything is possible with Uranus. And so what you said is true, but there's also, I think it's helpful if we are setting intentions to consciously say, this is what I want, but this is what I'm going to focus on. This is what I'm going to focus on is a subset of what I want. Because if you go for everything that's the Uranus, it's going to have to eventually meet up with Saturn.
Perfect. So big picture. And remember,
in March, some of this will happen in February, where Mercury moves into Aquarius and lines up with the sun. Lines up with Saturn in Aquarius. And then Venus will line up with Saturn in Aquarius. And then Mars will line up with Saturn in Aquarius. So this is all around the bend. And so it's almost like if we do Saturn's work in advance, rather than waiting to hit that wall because we're out of control, we're better off accomplishing something real that's less than not accomplishing anything at all because we've gone off the road.
Ooh, I love this. So this foresight of all this Saturn action that's going to be coming in March, we can anticipate this. And so we can see the big picture and these innovative ideas and maybe wild ideas or things that you want to accomplish in your life.
And we get foreshadowing of it when the sun conjoins Saturn on February 4th, the other conjunctions of Mercury, Venus, and Mars to Saturn don't happen until March and I think maybe even April.
Okay, so foreshadowing in the beginning of February and keeping in mind that Saturn will be activated again a lot in March and April. So knowing that, making your intentions realistic and putting some structure and paring down or simplifying the big picture idea into manageable steps. And yes, that's, if we focus on that throughout February, then we'll be ready for Saturn in March. We won't be blindsided like, oh God, you tried to.
We'll be more ready.
Yeah. More ready. There you go. Okay. So anything else about February that we should have our eyes on?
Yeah, there's a few dates that stand out with strong occurrences. On February 4th, we already talked about how Mercury turns direct on the 3rd and that the sun catches up with Saturn on the 4th. But also on the 4th, Mars makes a sextile with Jupiter. So as the sun is restrained by Saturn, Mars and Jupiter are giving us some sense of enthusiasm, some sense of going ahead, some sense of confidence, which may be false confidence, which certainly doesn't have to be good. Even though it's a sextile, it could feed this idea that if we hold this position, everything's going to work out, when the fact is that perhaps we should be, you know, negotiating. On February 8th, we have a trine from Mars moving through Capricorn, making a trine with Uranus. I like this, but it doesn't necessarily mean it'll be smooth and easy. Mars makes a trine to Uranus, and it actually makes a square to Chiron the couple days before. And so here is some disruption where we have to deal with either physical limitations or something from the past that is stopping us from getting to where we want to get to. And then by the eighth, when Mars makes that trine to Uranus, there's the sense of the freedom to be weird, to be different, to be innovative, to make those breakthroughs that I think happen with great ease around the eighth. We've already said on the 11th is when Mercury catches up with Pluto. It's a time when we're not satisfied with surface communication. We want to go deep. We need to talk about those things that we don't normally talk about because we're afraid to, or because we think it might be disruptive. Mercury conjunct Pluto brings that stuff out into the open. And in a way, Mercury, which just retrograde conjuncted Pluto at the end of January, really never gets very far away. It only gets about 3 degrees away before it turns direct again on February 3rd. And then by the 11th is lined back up with Pluto. So that all is certainly plutonic. On February 14th, we mentioned this, Mercury leaves Capricorn for the second time because it retrograded. It moved into Aquarius, then backed into Capricorn. Mercury moves back into Aquarius. Mercury likes being in Aquarius. It's quirky. It's futuristic. It's a bit dispassionate, especially with Saturn and the Sun in Aquarius already. There's that sense of intellectual, conceptual, breaking through old ideas. I think and it's on Valentine's Day, so it's kind of interesting. It almost suggests that on Valentine's Day, that even if you don't have a love or a lover, that it's a good day to hang out with friends, because Mercury in Aquarius is very much oriented toward friends. Aquarius, in some way, you know, as the sign of the 11th house, really has to do with relationships that are equal, which are friends. You know, historically at least, you know, a romantic relationship, a male and female, is not equal. There's a dominant and a submissive. And of course, historically, with the patriarchy that we're coming out of, it was the male that was dominant and the female that was submissive. Part of what's going on a larger scale is that energy is changing into friendship. I mean, historically, in the early 20th, 19th, 18th century, the idea of being a friend with your husband or wife was crazy. That husband-wife relationship was something unto itself, but you wouldn't necessarily be a friend with a lover. And that has changed, and that's the Aquarius energy. And when Mercury moves into Aquarius on February 14th on Valentine's Day, it makes an interesting statement. And by the way, Venus and Mars will both move into Aquarius in March. On February 16th, on the day of the full moon, on February 16th, and we talked about this full moon very, very briefly, but on the day that full moon is in late Leo, it's at 28 degrees of Leo, opposing the Sun at 28 degrees of Aquarius. But on that day is the exact Venus-Mars conjunction. that Venus-Mars conjunction is about creativity. It certainly feeds the idea of love. And so even on Valentine's Day, we have that Venus and Mars close together. This is the dance between our sense of values, our sense of beauty, Venus, our sense of aesthetic perfection, and Mars. How are we going to get there? What are we going to do to make it happen? And this is really Venus-Mars conjunctions are, in at least from one perspective, are the most creative aspect I think that one can have. And then we have that full moon on the 16th that is really the dilemma between personal love, I love you, moon in Leo, the I, me, mine part of love, the Leo part, and the Aquarius, the collective, the community, the global. And so here we struggle with a little bit of where is our place in the larger scheme of things. Another thing that happens in this period of time, exact on the 17th, but it's slow moving, is that Jupiter at 10, almost 11 degrees of Pisces, is making a sextile with Uranus. This is a slower moving aspect. It pretty much is in play for most of the month, and it's opening. I don't mean it's an opening aspect. I mean the energy is an opening energy. There's that line that is sometimes attributed to Frank Zappa, and he didn't say it, is that a mind is like a parachute. You know, it doesn't function when it's closed. And in a way, this Jupiter sextile Uranus is like, it's like an intellectual mental aha experience where lightning strikes. That would be Uranus, the great awakener. And Jupiter is in Pisces. And so we're getting a spiritual energy here. We're getting something out of compassion. And I like this aspect a lot. And it will be exact on February 17th, but we'll be feeling it for days before and days after. On the February 18th, we have the sun that moves from Aquarius into Pisces, and it does it on the 18th in the morning. And the sun's movement into Pisces is really a shift of energy, because now we have the sun and Jupiter and Neptune in Pisces, and eventually we'll have Mercury and Venus and Mars all sweeping through that area too. And this is certainly more of an emotional, a spiritual. It can be delusional as we move closer toward the mid-April Jupiter-Neptune conjunction. This is a conjunction of hope and of potential and of possibility, but it's also a conjunction where we can take our fantasies and think everything's going to be okay when it's not. So we have to watch that line between fantasy and reality. February 23rd, we have Mars making its sextile to Neptune. Again, this feeds fantasies. This is the ability to take our physical energy, Mars, and change it based upon our imagination and the fantasy. I mean, it's a great day for a costume party. Wrong time of year, I get. Maybe wrong time of wrong year in the larger scheme of things for parties anyhow. But that Mars sextile Neptune is about imagination, dreams. On February 23rd, which is actually a busy day, we also have Jupiter making a half square to Pluto. Now, these are subtle because they're longer lasting, but Jupiter is that opportunity. It's the potential. And Pluto is, we're back to that stuff that's really, really deep. And so I think that the agitation of a half square from Jupiter to Pluto on the 23rd, give or take a few days, can bring some things, not only bring things out into the open, but they become like balloons where we can then watch them fly and actually then be inspired by them and have them elevate us. One last thing I want to mention with just specific aspects as we get toward the end of the month is also a series of sextiles. I don't want to break them down individually, but it's again, a little bit smoother energy. But on February 24th, we have Mercury, and that would be Mercury having moved into Aquarius. On the 24th, Mercury makes an exact square with Uranus. Now, we don't see it this month, but what that means is that the Uranus and Saturn are now 7 degrees apart. So their orb is widening still. And so Mercury at 11 degrees of Aquarius makes a square with Uranus. This is, again, this is unstable. It's exciting. It's breakthrough. It's new. It's learning something new. But it's disruptive. Uranus is certainly disruptive. And that is on February 24th. Mercury continues to move forward. And by March 2nd, it's lined up with Saturn. We talked about that because that's the new moon. But again, we're seeing a planet lining up with Saturn after having squared Uranus. And this is bringing up those same energies that have been in play since last January, February, where we have a bifurcation of two different ways of looking at the universe, politics, disease, vaccines, so many things, where we're getting the Saturn Uranus square, and we're getting another run on this that comes to a culmination again at new moon in Pisces. So that pretty much takes us through the month. There's always more things, but I tried to pick out the dates that we might want to jot, make a note in our day timer. And of course, as we move through the month, your wonderful guides for the inner circle will help detail this week by week by week. I always try to give the overview, the broad vision.
It's so good. So Rick, you just brought up this, the Saturn Uranus square energy that we've been working with for at least a year, and that some of these issues that seem like we can't meet on, that they're going to be activated again, but this time with Uranus happening first and then Saturn.
Right? That's correct, because Saturn moves faster, and Saturn has caught up to the square. Now it's moved past it. So Uranus is at a lower degree. So that means that once a week, the moon is going to hit the degree of Uranus by conjunction square or opposition. And then a half a day later, it's going to hit the conjunction square or opposition to Saturn. In other words, these things become patterns that we almost don't notice them, because they're the same pattern that we have going on a grand scale. Now we have it going on a minuscule scale. Even the ascendant changing through all the signs once every 24 hours, that means that four times in 24 hours, the ascendant will conjunct, square, or oppose Uranus, and then just a few minutes later will square, conjunct, or oppose Saturn.
Wow.
So it's that same thing again and again. And one last thing I want to mention here, because I don't know if I've mentioned this before. It's actually something that I don't think I really thought about in this way until I watched the 10 episodes of Changing of the Gods, which is being released in February. And I know you have an interview with Rick Tarnas and a whole thing unfolding on that. But what dawned on me, and it's kind of stated in episode 10, and it's like, yeah, I knew that, but I never quite thought of it that way. And that is, you know, back in 2012 to 2015, we had the Uranus squaring Pluto. That was the opening square from the Uranus conjoined Pluto, like a new moon, back in the mid-60s. So this is a large thing about what this 10-episode documentary is about, is the new moon phase. In other words, the conjunction of Uranus and Pluto in the mid-60s. And then their square exactly from 2012 to 2015. But these slow-moving world transits last for way longer than a natal transit might. And so even though the exact Uranus square Pluto, even though the exact of that was seven times between 2012 to 2015, we're still in the ripples that have flowed out from those events. And even though the aspect is far from square right now, talking Uranus Pluto, in fact, it's actually approaching a trine. But here's the thing: if you can think of Saturn as the sweep second hand. Normally we think of Saturn as one of the slowest moving hands on the clock, almost like an hour hand, especially related to the sun and the moon and the inner planets. But if you think of the slow moving Uranus and Pluto, and you think of Saturn coming through that square, Saturn first lined up with Pluto and then squared Uranus. Uranus moves faster, so Uranus has separated from that square. All of a sudden, we realize this Saturn-Uranus square doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's actually Saturn doing the final round of cleanup after the Uranus-Pluto square. Uranus square Pluto, they've widened now almost into a trine, but Saturn coming through it lines up with Pluto and squares Uranus, even though it's wider than that square. It's basically tying up the loose ends and giving stability to all the changes that were in our face through the, particularly 2012 to 2015, but through the whole 2010s period.
Wow. That is an interesting perspective. I mean, I've been thinking of the Saturn Uranus squares as like a standalone experience.
Me too, Amanda.
Yeah.
Too.
Wow, fascinating. Yeah. Okay, so we have a interesting month in that it's feels distinctly different than the months that we've been having recently.
It's about time.
Yeah, I know. This is the first time I've been able to say in a long time that it's looking like a kinder and gentler month. Some of the things that you, some highlights or just some like key phrases that really jumped out at me that you said, I mean, we have Venus and Mercury going direct. They're the final holdouts from all the planets that have been retrograde since the fall of
right, which means that for most of February, even though Venus and Mercury start off moving direct slowly, that for most of February and all of March, everything is moving direct.
Which is amazing too. We haven't experienced that for a while. So having all this forward motion, this forward moving energy, you said that this month is a building month. It's building towards something.
Building to a crescendo.
Right, building to a crescendo. So keeping Saturnian things in mind as we're building could be a really wise way to use the astrology to format what we're doing or structure what we're doing. We're building towards something. There's also going to be this values under pressure. And I think that you were speaking more towards what's going to happen March 2nd with Venus there.
Yeah.
But we're building towards that. So getting clear on what your values are and seeing that these values are getting sort of forged in the fires. And
good way of saying it.
Potentially turned into something very new and having a very new expression of what those values are. This process of getting very clear on
your just think bronze has no properties in common with copper or tin.
Wow.
You know, tin and copper are totally malleable. You mix them together and bronze becomes hardened so that it lasts. That's the importance of the Bronze Age, why it was such a big deal. It's also, incidentally, you know, there's a 1-to-1 ratio of metals to planets, or 1-to-1 correspondence, so that the sun is gold and the moon is silver, Mercury is mercury, Venus is copper, Mars is iron, Jupiter is tin, and Saturn is lead. Well, here's the crazy thing, is that the Romans would have never gone all the way to England and basically conquered Europe along the way and England and built all the roads through that. The reason why they went to England was they got copper, cuprous in Latin, from the island of Copper, which is Cyprus. Cyprus is cuprous. Cyprus is the island of copper. In fact, the mythology is that Venus was born of the waves as Saturn inseminated the ocean with his sperm, as the waves washed on the shore of Cyprus. That's where Venus was born, copper. But they couldn't get tin locally. And tin, which is ruled by Jupiter, they had to go far away, Jupiter, to get it, which is why they had to conquer England, because England has huge reserves and mines of tin.
Wow.
Which they needed to make bronze.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah, off track a bit, but an interesting.
I love it. Oh, yeah. Great tidbit for us. Okay, so this is also going to be a time where more of the power struggles are coming out into the open. There could be, let's see.
As they began to, even in late December, when Venus first conjoined Pluto before she went retrograde and direct.
Okay. All right. And I mean, it's basically this idea of building towards this crescendo. I mean, you were the one who said in 2019 that the most important event of 2019 was the Saturn-Pluto conjunction of 2020. I feel like you're saying something very similar right now. The most important event of February
is on March 2nd.
On March 2nd. So we're in that preparation mode and getting glimpses into what that could be about, and just staying focused on the things that we can do in our lives that are aligned with our values, that have some discipline and structure and form, are important things to do.
You know, it's even worse than that. It's not only is the most important event of February on March 2nd, but the most important event at the beginning of February is actually on January 31st.
Exactly. All right.
You're going to have to change my contract and allow me to talk about more befores and afters.
Well, your contract was temporarily changed for this episode. For sure. Good. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to get in trouble for that. You had to go there. Yeah. If you're new to this and you're like, what are they talking about? Rick always makes the joke that according to his contract, he can only talk about the actual month ahead, that he's not allowed to talk about the months after, which is, of course, not true. But we get a laugh about it every time. All right. Thanks, everybody, so much for being here. Rick, thank you for getting us prepared for this month. I feel like we have real practical, tangible, useful information that we can use. And I thank all of you for your enthusiasm and the support that you give each other in the chat and actually in the comments after the videos, too. It's always so beautiful to see this community coming together and supporting each other and sharing in our love of astrology. So thanks for being here. Thank you so much for being a part of our community. Don't forget to sign up for Rick's Instagram.
Rick Levine Astrologer, all one word.
Someone was sort of confused between the things. So Rick Levine Astrologer, all one word.
That's Rick Levine Astrologer, all one word.
Yes. And don't forget to sign up for the wait list for Christopher Renstrom's Cosmic Calendar course, which is coming up very, very soon here in March. Okay. Thanks, everybody. And Rick, thank you. And we will, thank you for being a part of our community. And thank you, as always, for making astrology a part of your life. We'll catch you on the next episode. Take care, everyone.